Well, thanks so much for doing this, guys. I feel like we've been excited to do a collab for a while.
I love crossovers. Yeah, this is great. Like the ultimate meta about just podcasters talking to other podcasters.
Yeah, still a lot of podcasts all the way up. I figured we'd have a pretty free-ranging conversation today, but brought a few conversation starters to kick us off. And so I figured one interesting place to start is, you know, obviously it feels like this world is changing like every few months. Wondering as you guys reflect back on the past year, like, what surprised you the most?
I think definitely reasoning models. We kind of on the right here. We're like calling. Oh, that. Well, I think there's like the what surprised us in a good way, maybe in a bad way. I would say in a good way, reasoning models, and I think the release of them right after the new reps scaling is dead talk by Ilya. I think there was maybe like a little. It's so over, and then we're so back in like such a short
period. It was really fortuitous timing, like right as pre-training died. I mean, obviously, I'm sure within the labs, they knew pre-training was dying and had to find something. But it, you know, from the outside, it was it felt like one right into the other.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a good surprise.
I would say if you want to make that comment about timing, I think it's suspiciously neat that like because we know that Strawberry was being worked on for like 2 years ish. Like we know exactly when Noam joined OpenAI, and that was obviously a big strategic bet by OpenAI. So like for it to transition so nicely when like pre-training is kind of tapped out to into like, oh, now inference time is the new scaling law, is like very convenient. I like if there were an Illuminati, this would be what they planned.
Or if we're living in a simulation or something.
Yeah.
Then you said open source as well?
Yeah, well, no, I think like open source, yeah, we're discussing this on the negative. I would say the relevance of open source.
Specifically open models.
Yeah, I was surprised like the llamas of the world. By the lack of adoption. And I mean, people use it, obviously, but I would say nobody's really like a huge fanboy. You know, I think the local llama community and some of the more obvious use cases really like it, but when we talk to like enterprise folks, it's like, it's cool, you know? And I think people love to argue about licenses and all of that, but the reality is that it didn't really change the adoption path of AI, so.
Yeah, the specific stat that I got from Ankur from Braintrust in one of the episodes that we did was, I think he estimated that open source model usage in work in enterprises is at like 5% and going down.
And it feels like you're basically, all these enterprises are in like use case discovery mode where it's like, let's just take what we think is the most powerful model and figure out if we can find anything that works. And, you know, so much of it feels like discovery of that. And then right as you've discovered something, a new generation of models are out. And so you have to go do discovery with those. And, you know, I think obviously we're probably optimistic that the open source models increase in uptake. It's funny, I was going to say my biggest surprise in the last year was open source related, but it was just how fast open source caught up on the reasoning models. It was kind of unclear to me, like over time, whether there would be, you know, compounding advantage for some of the closed source models where in the early days of scaling, you know, there was a tight time loop, but over time, you know, would the gap increase? And if anything, it feels like a trunk, you know, and I think DeepSeek specifically was just really surprising in how, you know, in many ways, if the value of these model companies is like, you have a model for a period of time and you're the only one that can build products on top of that model while you have it, like, God, that time period is a lot shorter than I thought it was going to be a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't like this label of how fast open source caught up because it's really how fast DeepSeek caught up, right? And now we have, like, I think some evidence that DeepSeek is basically going to stop open sourcing models. Yeah. So, like, there's no team open source. There's just different companies and they choose to open source or not. And we got lucky with DeepSeek releasing something. And then everyone else is basically distilling from DeepSeek. And those are distillations catching up is such an easier, lower bar than like actually catching up, which is like you're like from scratch, you're training something that like is competitive. On that front, I don't know if that's happening. Like basically the only player right now is we're waiting for Llama 4.
I mean, it's always an order of magnitude cheaper to replicate what's already been done than to create something fundamentally new. And so that's why I think DeepSeek overall was overhyped, right? I mean, obviously it's a good open source new entrant, but at the same time, there's nothing new fundamentally there other than sort of doing it, executing what's already been done really well.
Yeah.
Right.
So. Well, but I think the traces is like maybe the biggest thing. I think most previous open models is like the same model, just a little worse and cheaper.
Yeah.
Like R1 is like the first model that had the full traces. So I think that's like a net unique thing in
that's
open
fair.
Source. But yeah, I think like we talked about DeepSeek in our end of year 2023 recap, and we're mostly focused on cheaper inference. Like we didn't really have DeepSeek.
DeepSeek V3 was out then, and we were like, that was already like talking about fine grain. Make sure I have experts and all that.
Yeah, like, that's so a great receipt to have to be like, yeah, end of year 23. Yeah, that's an impressive one.
You follow the right whale believers in Twitter. it's like pretty obvious. I actually had I used to be in finance and a lot of my hedge fund and PE friends called me up. They were like, why didn't you tip us off on DeepSeek? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's been there. It's actually like kind of surprising that like NVIDIA like fell like what 15% in one day.
Yeah.
Because of DeepSeek. And I think it's just like whatever the public market narrative decides is a story becomes the story. But really, like the technical movements are usually 1 to 2 years in the making before that.
Basically, these people were telling on themselves that they didn't listen to your podcast. They've been on the end of year 2023.
No. Like, we weren't like banging the drum. So like, it's also on us to be like, no, like this is an actual tipping point. And I think as people who are like, our function as podcasters and industry analysts is to raise the bar or focus attention on things that you think matter. And sometimes we're too passive about it. And I think I was too passive there. I'd be happy to own up on that.
No, I feel like over time, you guys have moved into this more interesting role of like taking stances of things that are or aren't important. And, you know, I feel like you've done that with MCP of late and a bunch of things.
Yeah. So like the general push is AI engineering, you know, like it's got to rep the shirt. And MCP is part of that. But like the general movement is what can engineers do above the model layer to augment model capabilities, and it turns out it's a lot. And turns out we went from like making fun of GPT wrappers to now I think the overwhelming consensus is GPT wrappers is the only thing that's interesting.
Yeah. I remember like Arvin from Perplexity came on our podcast and he was like, I'm proudly a wrapper. Like, yeah, you know, it's like anyone that's like talking about like, you know, differentiation, like pre-product market fit is like a ridiculous thing to say. Like, build something people want, and then over time you can kind of worry about that.
Yeah, I interviewed him in 2023, and I think he may have been the first person on our podcast to like proudly be a GPT wrapper.
Yeah.
And obviously he's built a huge business on that.
Totally. Now we all can't get enough of it.
I have another one for, that was Alessio's one. And we prepped individual answers just to be interesting.
In the same Uber on the way up?
Yeah.
You just like in different.
Oh, I was driving too.
Oh, you were driving.
So
it
was actually.
I mean, it was a Tesla, made it here, okay. So I mostly drove myself. Mine was actually, it's interesting that low code builders did not capture the AI builder market, right? AI builders being Bolt and Lovable, low code builders being Zapier, Airtable, Retool, Notion, any of those, like, when you're not technical, you can build software.
Yeah.
Somehow, not all of them missed it. Why?
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Like, they should have the DNA. I don't know. They already have the reach. They already have the distribution. Like, why? I have no idea.
The ability to fast follow, too. Like, I'm surprised.
Yeah, there's just nothing.
Yeah. What do you make of that?
It seems, and you know, not to come back to the AI engineering pitch, like it takes a certain kind of founder mindset or AI engineer mindset to be like, we will build this from whole cloth and not be tied to existing paradigms, I think. Because if I'm to, you know Wade, who's the Zapier person that you know? Mike. Who has left Zapier?
The Zapier person.
Zapier, when they decided to do Zapier AI, they were like, oh, you can use natural language to make Zapier actions, right? When Notion decided to do Notion AI, they were like, oh, you can like, you know, write documents or, you know, fill in tables with AI. Like, they didn't do the next step because they already had their base, and they were like, let's improve our baseline. And the other people who actually tried to create a whole cloth where like we got no prior preconceptions, like let's see what kind of software people can build with like from scratch, basically. I don't know. That's my explanation. I don't know if you guys have any retros on the AI builders.
Yeah, or did they kind of get lucky getting, you know, starting that product journey like right as the models were reaching the inflection point?
There's the timing issue. Yeah. I don't know. Like I, to some extent, I think the only reason you and I are talking about it is that they both of them have reported like ridiculous numbers, like 0 to 20 million in 3 months, basically both of them.
Jordan, did you have a big surprise?
Yeah, I mean, some of what's already been discussed. I guess the only other thing would be on the Apple side in particular. I think for
those text message summaries, like,
but they're funny.
They're funny at how bad they are and how off they are.
Very viral.
Yeah, I mean, so like for the last couple of years, we've seen so many companies that are trying to do personal assistants, like all these various consumer things. And one of the things we've always asked is, well, Apple is in prime position to do all this. And then with Apple Intelligence, they just totally messed up in so many different ways. And then the whole BBC thing, saying that the guy shot himself when he didn't. And just like, there's just so many things at this point that I would have thought that they would have ironed up their AI products better, but just didn't really catch on.
you know, second on this list of generally overly broad opening questions would be anything that you guys think is kind of like overhyped or underhyped in the AI world right now?
Overhyped agents framework.
Sorry. Not naming any particular ones.
I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. It's not, I would say they're just overall a chase to try and be the framework when the workloads are like in such flux that I just think it's like so hard to reconcile the two. I think what Harrison and LangChain has done so amazingly is like product velocity. Like, you know, the initial abstractions were maybe not the ending abstraction, but like they were just releasing stuff every day trying to be on top of it. But I think now we're like past that. Like what people are looking for now is like something that they can actually build on and stay on for the next couple of years. And we talked about this with Brett Taylor on our episode, and it feels like it's like the jQuery era of like agents and LLMs. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, single file, big frameworks, kind of like a lot of helpers, but maybe we need React. And I think people are just trying to build still jQuery. Like, I don't really see a lot of people doing React-like.
Yeah. Maybe the only modification I made about that is maybe it's too early even for frameworks at all.
And the thing do you think there's enough stability in the underlying model layer and patterns to have this?
The thing is the protocol and not the framework.
Yeah.
Because frameworks inherently embed protocols, but if you just focus on a protocol, maybe that works. And obviously MCP is the current leading area. And, you know, I think the comparison there would be instead of just jQuery, it is XML HTTP requests, which is like the thing that enabled Ajax. And that was the sort of inciting incident for JavaScript being popular as a language.
I would largely agree with that. I mean, I think on the React side of things, I think we're starting to see more frameworks sort of go after more of that. I guess like Mastra is sort of like on the TypeScript side and more of like a sort of...
Mastra.
The traction is really impressive there. And so I think we're starting to see more surface there, but I think there's still a big opportunity.
What do you have for an over or underhyped?
On the underhyped side, you know, I know I mentioned Apple already, but I think the private cloud compute side with PCC, I actually think that could be really big. It's under the radar right now, but in terms of basically bringing the on-device sort of security to the cloud, they've done a lot of architecturally interesting things there.
Who's they?
Apple.
Oh, okay.
On the PCC side. And so I actually think that.
See, a negative on Apple Intelligence, but positive on Apple Cloud.
On the more of the local device sort of, I think there will be a lot of workloads still on device, but when you need to speak to the cloud for larger LLMs, I think that Apple has done really interesting thing on the privacy side.
Yeah, we did the seed of a company that does that. So.
Yeah, especially as things become more consumerized.
Did you just set them up on purpose? So that felt like a perfect.
Yeah, no, I was like, let's go, Jordan.
Like, have you guys been colluding before this episode?
Tell me about that company after. Yeah.
we'll chat after. But yes, I think that's like the unique... the thing about LLM workloads is like you just cannot have everything be single tenant because you just cannot get enough GPUs. Like even like large enterprises are used to having VPCs and like everything runs privately, but now you just cannot get enough GPUs to run in a VPC. So I think you're gonna need to be in a multi-tenant architecture, and you need, like you said, like single tenant guarantees in multi-tenant environments. So yeah, it's an interesting space.
Yeah, what about you, Swix?
Under hyped, I want to say memory. Just like stateful AI. As part of my keynote every conference I do a keynote. And I try to do the task of like define an agent. Just, you know, always
evergreen content for a keynote.
but I did it in a way that it was like I think like what a researcher would do. Like you survey what people say and then you sort of categorize and go like, okay, this is the what everyone calls agents, and here are the groups of definitions, pick and choose, right? And then it was very interesting that the week after that, OpenAI launched their agents SDK and kind of formalized what they think agents are. Cloudflare also did the same with us. None of them have memory. It's very strange. Pretty much like the only big lab, obviously there's conversation memory, but there's not memory like in like a let's store a knowledge graph of facts about you and like, you know, exceed the context length. Pretty much if you look closely enough, there's a really good implementation of memory inside of MCP. When they launched with the initial set of servers, they had a memory server in there, which I would recommend as like, that's where you start with memory. But I think like if there was a better memory abstraction, then a lot of our agents would be smarter and could learn on the job, which is something that we all want. And for some reason, we've all just like ignored that because it's just convenient to. And
well, do you feel like it's being ignored, or it's just a really hard problem? And like lots of, I feel like lots of people are working on it. Just feels like it's proven more challenging.
So Harrison has LangMem, which I think now he's like, you know, relaunched again. And then we had Letta come speak at our conference. I don't know, Zep, I think there's a bunch of other memory guys, but like something like this, I think should be normal in the stack. And basically, I think anything stateful should be interesting to VCs, because it's databases and, you know, we know how those things make money.
I think on the overhyped side, the only thing I'd add is like, I'm still surprised how many net new companies there are training models. I thought we were kind of like past that. And
I would say they died end of last year, and now they've resurfaced.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the questions that you had down there of like,
Sorry,
is there an opportunity for net new model players? I would have said no. I don't know what you guys think.
I don't have a reason to say no, but I also don't have a reason to say this is what is missing and you should have a new model company do it. But again, I'm an
like
AI
all these
engineer.
Guys want to pursue AGI. You know, they all want to be like, oh, we'll like hit, you know, sort of on all the benchmarks, and like they can't all do it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if Ilya has the secret approach up his sleeve of something beyond test time compute, but it was funny. We had Noam Shazir on the podcast last week. I was asking him like, you know, is there like some sort of other algorithmic breakthrough? What do you make of Ilya? And he's like, look, I think what he implicitly said was test time compute will get us to the point where these models are doing AI engineering for us. And so, you know, at that point, they'll figure out the next algorithmic breakthrough, which I thought was pretty interesting.
I agree with you, Swix. I think that we're most interested, at least from our side, in like, you know, foundation models for specific use cases and more specialized use cases. I guess the broader point is if there is something like that, that these companies can latch onto and being there sort of known for being the best at, maybe there's a case for that. Largely, though, I do agree with you that I don't think there should be, at this point, more model companies.
I think it's like these unique data sets, right? Like, I mean, obviously, robotics has been an area we've been really interested in. It's an entirely different set of data that's required, you know, on top of, like, a good BLM. And then, you know, biology, material science.
More the specific use cases. Basically.
Yeah, but also specific, like, specific, you know, I think markets. A lot of these models are super generalizable. But, like, you know, finding opportunities to, you know, where, you know, for a lot of these bio companies, they have wet labs. Like, they're, like, running a ton of experiments or, you know, same on the material sciences side. And so I still feel like there's some opportunities there, but the core kind of like LLM agent space is it's tough to compete with the big ones.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, but they're moving more into product. So I think that's the question is like, if they could do better vertical models, why not do that instead of trying to do deep research and operator and these different things? Mm-hmm. I think that's what I'm, in my mind, it's like.
Agents coming out too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in my mind, it's like financial pressure. Like they need to monetize in a much shorter time frame because the costs are so high. But maybe it's like it's not that easy to do.
You think they would be, that it would be a better business model to like do a bunch of vertical?
It's more like, why wouldn't they? You know, like you make less enemies if you're like a model builder, right?
Yeah.
Like now with deep research and like search, now Perplexity is like an enemy, and like, you know, Gemini deep research is like more of an enemy versus if they were doing a finance model, you know, or whatever, like they would just enable so many more companies. And they always have, like they had Abia as one of the customer case studies for GPT search, but they're not building a finance-based model for them. So is it because it's super hard and somebody should do it? Or is it because the new models are going to be so much better that like the vertical models are useless anyways? Like
this
the
is
bitter
just
lesson.
Bitter lesson.
Yeah, exactly.
It still seems to be a somewhat outstanding question. I'd say like all the signs of the last few years seem to be like a general purpose model is like the way to go. And you know, tailor, like training a hyper-specific model in a domain is like, you know, maybe it's cheaper and faster, but it's not going to be like higher quality. But also, like, I think it's still. I mean, we were talking to Noam and Jack Ray from Google last week, and they were like, "Yeah, this is still an outstanding." Like, we check this every time we have a new model, like whether there's, you know, that still seems to be holding. I remember like a few years ago, it felt like all the rage was like there was like the Bloomberg GPT model came out, and everyone was like, "Oh, you got to like, you know,
yeah,
take your massive
I had
data
the VP of AI Bloomberg present on that."
Yeah, and, that must be a really interesting episode to go back on because I feel like like very shortly thereafter, the next OpenAI model came out and just like beat it on all sorts of.
No, it was a talk. We haven't released it yet, but yeah, I mean, it's basically they concluded that the closed models were better, so they just
they
stopped
talking. Interesting. Exactly. Yeah. So I feel like that's been the.
But he's I would be. He's very insistent that the work that they did, the team he assembled, the data that he collected is actually useful for more than just the model. So like basically everything but the model survived.
What are the other things?
The data pipeline, the team that they assembled for like fine tuning and implementing whatever models they ended up picking. Yeah, it seems like they are happy with that and they're running with that. He runs like 12, 13 teams at Bloomberg, just working on GenAI across the company.
I mean, I guess we've all kind of been alluding to it right now, but I guess because it's a natural transition, you know, the other broad opening I had was just what we're paying most attention to right now. And I think back on this, like, you know, the model companies coming into the product area, I mean, I think that's going to be like, I'm fascinated to see how that plays out over the next year and kind of these like frenemy dynamics. And it feels like it's going to first boil up on like Cursor, Anthropic, and like the way that plays out over the next 6 months, I think will be.
What is Cursor, Anthropic? You mean Cursor versus Anthropic?
Yeah, or? I mean, I assume, you know, over time, Anthropic wants to get more into the application side of coding. And, you know, I assume over time, Cursor will want to diversify off of, you know, just using the Anthropic model.
It's interesting that now Cursor is now worth like $10 billion, $9, $10 billion.
Yeah.
And, like, they've made themselves hard to acquire. Like, I would have said, like, you should just... You get yourself to $5-6 billion and join OpenAI, and like all the training data goes to OpenAI, and that's how they train their coding model. Now it's complicated. Now they need to be an independent company.
And increasingly, it seems that the model companies want to get into the product layer, and so seeing over the next 6-12 months, does having the best model, you know, let you kind of start from a cold start on the product side and get something in market, or are the, you know, companies with the best products, even if they eventually have to switch to a somewhat worse, tiny bit worse model, does it not, you know, where do the developers ultimately choose to go? I think that'll be super interesting.
Yeah.
But don't you think that Devin is more in trouble than Cursor? I feel like Anthropic, if anything, wants to move more towards, I don't think they want to build the IDE. Like, if I think about coding, it's like kind of like, you know, you look at it like a cube. It's like the IDE is like one way to look at the code, and then the agent is like the other side.
Yeah.
I feel like Anthropic wants more be on the agent side and then hand you off to Cursor when you want to go in depth versus like trying to build the Claude IDE. I think that's not.
I would say. I don't know how you think. The existence of Claude code doesn't support what you say. Like, maybe they would, but.
I assume all this, like, I assume both just converge eventually where you want to have, where you'll be able to do both.
So in order to be, we're talking about coding agents, whether it's sort of, what is it, inner loop versus outer loop, right? Mm-hmm. Like, inner loop is inside Cursor, inside your IDE, between, inside of a Git commit, and outer loop is between Git commits on the cloud. And I think, like, to be an outer loop coding agent, you have to be more of a, like, we will integrate with your code base, we'll sign your whatever, you know, security thing that you need to sign, that kind of schlep. I don't think the model labs want to do that schlep. They just want to provide models. So that would be my argument against like why Cognition should still have some moat against Anthropic, just simply because they Cognition would do the schlep and the biz dev and the infra that Anthropic doesn't really care about.
I don't know. The schlep is pretty sticky though. Once you do it,
it's very sticky. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I think the natural winner of that should be Sourcegraph. But like, there's
another unprompted mention right point portfolio.
I mean, they're big supporters. I'm very friendly with both Quinn and Liang, and they've done a lot of work with Cody, but like not much work on the outer loop stuff yet. But like any company where like they have already had like we've been around for 10 years, we like have all the enterprise contracts. That you already trust us with your code base. Why would you go trust like Factory or Cognition as like, you know, 2-year-old startups who like just came out of MIT. Like, I don't know.
I guess switching gears to the application side, I'm curious for both of you, like, how do you kind of characterize what has genuine product market fit in AI today? And I guess Alessio, more on your side of the investing side, like, more interesting to invest in that category of the stuff that works today, or kind of where the capabilities are going long term?
That's hard.
I was asking you to do my job for
it. Yeah, you were like, man, that's easy.
Tell us all your investing theses.
I would say we only really do mostly seed investing, so it's hard to invest in things that already work.
Because
they're already late. So we try to, but we try to be at the cusp of, like, you know, usually the investments we like to make, there's like really not that much market risk. It's like if this works, obviously people are gonna use it, but like it's unclear whether or not it's gonna work. So that's kind of more what we skew towards. We try not to chase as many trends, and I don't know. I was a founder myself, and sometimes I feel like it's easy to just jump in and do the thing that is hot. But like becoming a founder to do something that's like underappreciated, or like doesn't yet work, shows some level of like grit and self. Like you actually really believe in the thing. So that alone for me is like kind of makes me skew more towards that. And you do a lot of angel investing too, so I'm curious how.
Yeah, but I don't. I don't put that in my mental framework of things. Like, I come at this much more as a content creator or market analyst of like, yeah, it really does matter to me what has product market fit, because people, I have to answer the question of what is working now when people ask me.
Do you feel like relative to the obviously the hype and discourse out there, like, you know, do you feel like there's a lot of things that have product market fit, or like a few things? Like
a few things.
Yeah.
I have a list of like, 2 years ago, I wrote the Anatomy of Autonomy post, where it was like the first, like, what's going on in agents and what is actually making money. Because I think there's a lot of Gen AI skeptics out there that are like, these things are toys, they're not unreliable, and, you know, why are you dedicating your life to these things? And I think for me, the product market fit bar at the time was $100 million, right? Like, what use cases can reasonably fit $100 million? And at the time, it was like Copilot, it was Jasper, no longer, but you know, in that category of like help you write, which I think was helpful, and then and Cursor I think was on there as like a coding agent plus. I think that list will just grow over time of like the form factors that we know to work, and then we can just adapt the form factors to a bunch of other things. So like the one that's the most recently added to this is deep research, right? Where anything that looks like a deep research, whether it's a Grok version, Gemini version, Perplexity version, whatever. He has an investment that that he likes called Brightwave, that is basically deep research for finance.
Yeah.
And anything where like, all right, it's like long-term agentic reporting. It's starting to take more and more of the job away from you, and just give you much more reason to report. I think it's going to work, and that has some PMF. I think obviously has PMF. Like I would say, I went through this exercise of trying to handicap how much money OpenAI made from launching OpenAI Deep Research. I think it's billions. Like the sheer upgrade from like $20 to $200, it has to be billions in ARR. Maybe not all of them will stick around, but like that is some amount of PMF that is.
Didn't they have to immediately drop it down to the $20 tier?
They expanded access. I wouldn't say.
Which I thought was really telling of the market, right? It's like where you have a, you know, I think it's gonna be so interesting to see what they're actually able to get in that $200 or $2,000 tier, which we all think is you know, has a ton of potential, but I thought it was fascinating. I don't know whether it was just to get more people exposure to it, or the fact that like Google had a similar product, obviously, and other folks did too. But it was really interesting how quickly they dropped it down.
I think that's just a more general policy of no matter what they have at the top tier, they always want to have smaller versions of that in the lower tiers.
Yeah, just get people exposure to it.
Just get exposure. The brand of being first to market and like the default choice is paramount to OpenAI.
Though I thought that whole thing was fascinating because Google had the first product, right?
Yeah.
And no, like, you know,
Interviewed them. I straight up to their faces, I was like, OpenAI mocked you. And they were like, yeah.
Well, actually, I'm curious, like, what's it, this is totally off topic, but whatever. Like, what is it going to take for Google just released some great models like a few weeks ago. Like, I feel like
it's happening.
The stuff they're shipping is really cool.
It's happening.
But I also feel like at least in the, you know, broader discourse, it's still like a drop in the bucket relative to.
Yeah. I mean, I can riff on this. I think it's happening. I think it takes some time, but I am like my Gemini usage is up. Like I use it a lot more for anything from like summarizing YouTube videos to the native image generation that they just launched to like flash thinking.
Multimodal stuff's great.
Yeah, I run I run like a daily sort of news recap called AI News that is 99% generated by models, and I do a bake off between all the frontier models every day.
Does it switch?
It does switch, and I manually do it. And Flash wins most days. So I think it's happening. I think I was thinking about tracking myself, like number of opens of ChatGPT versus Gemini, and at some point it will cross. I think that Gemini will be my main, that will slowly happen for a bunch of people, and then that'll shift. I think that's really interesting. For developers, it's a different question.
Yeah.
It's Google getting over itself of having Google Cloud versus Vertex versus AI Studio, all these like five different brands, like, slowly consolidating it. It'll happen just slowly, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, another good example is like you cannot use the thinking models in Cursor. Yeah. And I know Logan Kilpatrick said they're working on it, but I think there's all these small things where like if I cannot easily use it, I'm really not going to go out of my way to do it. But I do agree that when you do use them, their models are great. So yeah, they just need better bridges.
You had one of the questions in the prep. What public company are you long and short? And mine is Google versus Apple.
Like that long, was, that long was also short my, Apple. Yeah. My combo. I feel like, yeah, I mean, it does feel like Google's really cooking right now.
Yeah. So, okay, coming back to what has product market fit.
Now that we come back to my complete total sidetrack.
there's also customer support. We were talking on the car about Decagon and Sierra. Obviously, Brett Taylor is founder of Sierra. And it seems like there's just these layers of agents that'll, like, I think you just look at like the income statement or like the org chart of any large scaled company and you start picking them off one by one. What like is interesting knowledge work, and they would just kind of eat things slowly from the outside in.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I mean, the episode with Brett, he's so passionate about developer tools, and yeah, he did not do a developer tools. We spent like 2 hours talking about developer tools and like all of that stuff, and he's like, "I did a customer support company." I'm like, man, that says something. You know what I mean? It's like when you have somebody like him who can like raise any amount of money from anybody to do anything.
Yeah,
to pick customer support as the market to go after, while also being the chairman of OpenAI, like that shows you that like these things have moats and have longstanding, like they're gonna stick around, you know. Otherwise, he's smarter than that. So, that's a space where maybe initially, I would have said, I don't know if it's like the most exciting thing to jump into. But then if you really look at the shape of like how the workforce are structured and like how the cost centers of like the business really end up, especially for more consumer facing businesses, like a lot of it goes into customer support. All the AI story of the last 2 years has been cost cutting.
Yep.
I think now we're gonna switch more towards growth.
Revenue.
Totally. You know, like you've seen Jensen, like last year at GTC was saying, the more you buy, the more you save. This year said, the more you buy, the more you make. So we're
hot
we're,
off the press.
We were there. We
I
were
do.
There.
Yeah, I do think that's one of the most interesting things about this first wave of apps, where it's like almost the easiest thing that you could get real traction with was stuff that, you know, for lack of a better way to frame it, like stuff that people had already been comfortable outsourcing to BPOs or something, and kind of implicitly said like, hey, this is a cost center. Like we are willing to take some performance cut for cost in the past. You know, the irony of that, or what I'm really curious to see how it plays out, is, you know, you could imagine that is the area where price competition is going to be most fierce, because it's already stuff that, that people have said, hey, we don't need the like 100% best version of that. And I wonder, you know, this next wave of apps may prove actually even more defensible as you get these capabilities that actually are, you know, increased top line or whatnot, where you're like, you know, take AI go to market, for example, like you pay like twice as much for something that brought like, because there's just a kind of very clean ROI story to it. And so I wonder ultimately whether the, like this next set of apps actually ends up being more interesting than the first wave.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the voice AI ones are interesting too, because you don't need 100% precision recall to actually, you know, have a great product. And so, for example, we looked into a bunch of scheduling intake companies, for example, like home services, right, for electricians and stuff like that. Today, they miss 50% of their calls. So even if the AI is only effective, say, 75% of the time, crazy, right? So if it's effective 75% of the time, that's totally fine, because that's still a ton of increased revenue for the customer, right? And so you don't need that 100% accuracy.
Yeah.
And so as the models and the reliability of these agents are getting better, it's totally fine, because you're still getting a ton of value in the meantime.
Yeah, I don't know how related this is, but one of my favorite meetings it is related. one of my favorite meetings at AI Engineering Summit, because like I do these. This was our first one in New York, and I just like met a different crew than you meet here. Like everyone here loves developer tools, loves infra. Over there, they're actually more interested in applications. It's kind of cool. I met this like bootstrap team that like they're only doing appointment scheduling for vets. And like they're like, this is an anomaly. We don't usually come to engineering summits, because we usually go to vet summits and like talk to the. They're like, you know, they're literally.
I'm sure it's a massive pain point. They're willing to pay a lot of money.
Yeah,
but this is like my point about saving versus making more. It's like if an electrician takes 2x more calls, do they have the bandwidth to actually do 2x more in-house?
Then they get higher.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's like I don't think today most businesses are like structured to just like overnight 2-3x the band. You know, I think that's like a startup thing. Like most businesses.
Then you make an electrician agent.
Well, not totally. Well, how do you do recruiting agent for electrician? So like electrician training. Yeah. How do you do Lambda school for electrician?
It's gonna be a hilarious game of whack-a-mole for the bottlenecks in these businesses. Like it's like, oh, now we have a ton of demand. Like, cool. Like, where do we go?
Yeah. So just to round out the PMF thing, I think this is relevant in a sense of like it's pretty obvious that the killer agents are coding agents, support agents, deep research, right? Roughly. Right, we've covered all those three already. Then you have to sort of turn to offense and go like, okay, what's next? And like,
I mean, also just like summarization of voice and conversation.
Yep, right? We actually had that on there. I didn't put it as agent because it seems less agentic, you know. But yes,
still a good AI use case.
That one I've seen. I would mention Granola and what's the other one? Monterey.
I think a bridge was the one you wanted to mention.
Bridge, yeah.
Bridge. Okay. So I'll call out what I had on my slides for the agent engineering thing. So it was screen sharing, which I think is actually kind of underrated. Like people like an AI watching you as you do your work and just like offering assistance. Outbound sales. So instead of support, just being more outbound. Hiring.
You say outbound sales has product market fit?
No, it will. It's coming.
Oh, on the comp. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Hiring, like the recruiting side, education, like the sort of like personalized teaching. I think.
I'm kind of shocked we haven't seen more there.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's like
Duolingo is the thing. Kamigo.
Yeah, I mean, Speak and some of these like practice.
Yeah, interesting. And then finance, there's a ton of finance cases that we can talk about that. And then personal AI, which we also had a little bit of that. But I think personal AI is harder to monetize. But I think those would be like what I would say is up and coming in terms of like that's what I'm currently focusing on.
I feel like this question's been asked a few different ways, but I'm curious what you guys think. It's like, is it like if we just froze model capabilities today, like is there trillions of dollars of application value to be unlocked? Like AI education, like if we just stopped today all model development, like with this current generation of models, we could probably build some pretty amazing education apps. Or like how much of all this is like contingent upon just like, okay, people have had 2 years with GPT-4 and like, 6 months with the reasoning models. Like how much is contingent upon it just being more time with these things versus like the models actually have to get better? I don't know. It's a hard question, so I'm going to just throw it to you.
Yeah. Well, I think the societal thing is maybe harder, especially in education. You know, like, can you basically, like, doge the education system? Probably you should, but, like, can you? I think it's more of a human.
But people pay for all sorts of, like, get-ahead things outside of class. And, you know, certainly in other countries, there's a ton of consumer spend in education. It feels like the market opportunity is there.
Yeah, and in private education, I think. Public is very different. Yeah. One of my most interesting quests from last year was kind of reforming Singapore's education system to be more sort of AI native.
Just what you were doing on the side while you were...
Yes.
That's a great side quest.
My stated goal is for Singapore to be the first country that has Python as a first language, as a national language. The pushback I got from the Ministry of Education was that the teachers would be unprepared to do it. So it was really interesting. Like immediate pushback was that the de facto teachers union being like resistant to change. And I'm like, okay, that's par for the course. Anyway, so not to dwell too much on that, but like, I think like education is one of those things that everyone like has strong opinions on because we all have kids, all been through the education system. I think it's going to be like the domain specific, like Speak, like such an amazing example of like top down, like we will go through the idea maze and we'll go to Korea and teach them English. Like, it's like, what the hell? I would love to see more examples of that. Like just like really focus, like no one try to solve everything. Just do your thing really, really well.
On this trend of difficult questions that come up, I'm going to just ask you the one that my partners like to ask me every single Monday, which is how do you think about defensibility at the app layer?
Oh yeah, that's great.
Just give me an answer I can copy paste and just like, have auto response.
Honestly, like network effects. I think people don't prioritize those enough because they're trying to make the single player experience good, but then they neglect the multiplayer experience. I think one of the, I always think about like load bearing episodes. Like, as podcasts that you do one a week and like, some of those you don't really talk about ever again, and others you keep mentioning every single podcast. And
this is obviously going to be the last. Yeah.
I think the recap episodes for us are pretty load bearing. Like, we refer to them every 3 months or so. One of them, I think, for us is Chai. For me, is Chai research. Even though that wasn't like a super popular one among the broader community outside of Chai, the Chai community. For those who don't know, Chai Research is basically a character AI competitor, right? They were bootstrapped, they were founded at the same time, and they have outlasted character de facto, right? It's funny, like, I would love to ask Noam Shazir a bit more about, like, the whole character thing, but...
Good luck getting past the Google comp.
he doesn't have his own models, basically. He has his own network of people submitting models to be run. And I think, like, that is, like, short-term going to be hurting him because he doesn't have proprietary IP. But long-term, he has the network effect to make him robust to any changes in the future. And I think, like... I want to see more of that, where like he's basically looking at himself as kind of a marketplace, and he's identified the choke point, which is both the app or the sort of protocol layer that interfaces between the users and the model providers, and then make sure that the money kind of flows through. And that works. I wish that more AI builders or AI founders emphasize network effects, because that's the only thing that you're going to have at the end of the day. Yeah. And like brand leads into network effects, you know.
Yeah, I guess harder in the enterprise context, right? But I mean, I feel it's funny. We do this exercise, and I feel like we talk a lot about like obviously there's kind of the velocity and the breadth you're able to kind of build of product surface area. There's just like the ability to become a brand in a space. Like I'm shocked, like even in like 6-9 months, how an individual company can become synonymous with like an entire category, and like then they're in every room for customers, yeah. And like so all like, the other startups are like clawing their way to try and get in like 1/20 of those rooms.
There's a bunch of categories where we talk about an IC, and it's like, oh, pricing compression is going to happen, not as defensible, and so ACVs are going to go down over time. In actuality, some of these, the ACVs have doubled, we've seen. And the reason for that is just, people go to them and pay for that premium of being that brand.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I'm struck by is there was such a head fake in the early days of AI apps where people were like, we want this amazing defensibility story. And then what's the easiest defensibility story? It's like, oh, like total unique data set or like train your own model or something. And I feel like that was just like a total head fake where I don't think that's actually useful at all. It's the much less, you sound much less articulate when you're like, well, the defensibility here is like the 1,000 small things that this company does to make like the user experience, design, everything just like delightful, and just like the speed at which they move to kind of both create a really broad product, but then also every 3-6 months when a new model comes out, it's kind of an existential event for like any company, because if you're not the first to like figure out how to use it, someone else will. And so velocity really matters there. And it's funny, in kind of our internal discussions, we've been like, man, that sounds pretty similar to like how we thought about like application SaaS companies. That there isn't some like revolutionary reason. You don't sound like a genius when you're like, here's applications, why application SaaS company A is so much better than B. But it's like a lot of little things that compound over time. What about the infrastructure space, guys? Like, I'm curious, how do you guys think about where the interesting categories are here today, and where do you want to see more startups, or where do you think there are too many?
Yeah, we call it kind of the LLMOS, but I would say
no. Andre calls it LLMOS.
Well,
everyone else just copies whatever.
You two and Andre, the three of you, call it the LLMOS.
Well, we have this like 4 words of AI framework
that
we use, and LLMOS is one of them, but. Yeah, I mean, code execution is one we've been banging the drum. Everybody now knows we're investors in E2P. Mm-hmm. Memory, is one that we kind of touched on before. Super interesting. Search, we talked about. I think those are more not traditional infra, not like the bare metal infra. It's more like the infra around
tools
the
for agents.
Model, you know, which I think is where a lot of the value is going to be. The
security
Apple.
Ones?
Yeah, and cybersecurity, there's so much to be done there. And it's more like basically any area where AI is being used by the offense, AI needs to be applied on the defense side, like email security, identity, like all these different things. So we've been doing a lot there, as well as, how do you rethink things that used to be costly, like red teaming, and maybe used to be a checkbox in the past. Today, they can be actually helpful to make you secure your app. And there's this whole idea of like semantics, right? That not the models can be good at. In the past, everything is about syntax. It's kind of like very basic, constraint rules. I think now you can start to infer semantics from things that are beyond just like simple recognition to like understanding why certain things are happening a certain way. So in the security space, we're seeing that with binary inspection, for example. Like there's kind of like the syntax, but then there are like semantics of like understanding what is this code overall really trying to do, even though this individual syntax is like saying something specific. Not to get too technical, but I think infra overall is like a super interesting place if you're making use of the model. If you're just I'm less bullish. Not that it's not a great business, but I think it's a very capital intensive business, which is like serving the models.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that inference, like, great, people will make money, but I don't think there's as much of a interest from us.
Yeah.
How do you guys think about what OpenAI and the big research labs will encompass as part of the developer and infra category?
Yeah, that's why I would say search is the first example of one of the things we used to mention on, you know, we had Axon on the podcast and Perplexity obviously as an API.
The basic idea is if you go into like the ChatGPT custom GPT builder, like what are the checkboxes? Each of them is a startup.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now they're also APIs. So yes. Now search is also an API. We'll see what the adoption is. There's the, you know, in traditional inference, like everybody wants to be multi-cloud. So maybe we'll see the same where ChatGPT search or OpenAI search API is like great with the OpenAI models because you get it all bundled in, but their price is very high. If you compare it to like, you know, AXA, I think it's like 5 times the price for the same amount of research, which makes sense if you have a big OpenAI contract, but maybe if you're just like picking best in breed, you want to compare different ones.
Yeah.
They don't have a code execution one. I'm sure they'll release one soon. So they want to own that too, but same question we were talking about before, right? Do they want to be an API company or a product company? Do you make more money building ChatGPT search or selling search API?
Yeah, the broader lesson, instead of like going, we did applications just now, and then what do you think is interesting infrastructure? Like, it's not 50-50. It's not like equal weighted. Like, it's just very clearly the application layer has like been way more interesting. Yeah. Like, yes, there's interesting infrastructure plays, and I even want to like push back on like the whole GPU serving thing, because like Together AI is doing well, Fireworks is doing well.
It's like data centers and inference providers feel
I think it's all like the capital.
For
capital efficiency, much larger funds, so I'm sure you have GPU clouds.
That is one thing I have been learning in that, I think I have historically had a DevTools and infra bias, and so has he, and we've had to learn that applications actually are very interesting, and also maybe kind of the killer application of models in the sense that you can charge for utility and not for cost. Right, which where like most infrastructure reduces to cost plus.
Yeah.
Right. So, and like that's not where you want to be for AI. So that's interesting for me. I thought it would be interesting for me to be the only non VC in the room to be saying what is not investable, because like I won't be canceled for saying like your whole category.
We have the thing where we're like, this thing is not investable, and then like 3 months later we're desperately chasing.
Exactly. So you don't want to be on the record.
It changes so fast. It's every opinion you hold, you have to like hold it quite loosely.
Yeah, I'm happy to be wrong in public. You know, I think that's how you learn the most, right?
Yeah.
So like fine tuning companies is something I struggled with, and still like I don't see how this becomes a big thing. Like you kind of have to wrap it up in a broader enterprise AI company, like services company, like a writer AI, where like they will find you and it's part of the overall offering, but like that's not where you spike. It's kind of interesting. And then I'll just kind of AI DevOps, and like there's a lot of AI SRE out there. Seems like there's a lot of data out there that should be able to be plugged into your code base or your app to sort of self-heal or whatever. It's just, I don't know if that's like been a thing yet, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. And then the last thing I'll mention is voice real-time infra. Again, like very interesting, very, very hot, but again, how big is it? Those are the main three that I'm thinking about for things I'm struggling with.
Yeah, I guess a couple comments. On the AI SRE side, I actually disagree with that one.
Yeah.
I think that the reason they haven't sort of taken off yet is because the tech is just not there quite yet. And so it goes back to the earlier question, do we think about investing towards where the companies will be when the models improve versus now? I think that's going to be, in short term, we'll get there, but it's just not there just yet. But I think it's an interesting opportunity overall.
Yeah. My pushback to you is, well, it's monitoring a lot of logs, right?
Yeah.
And it's basically anomaly detection rather than, like there's a whole bunch of like stuff that can happen after you detect the anomaly, but it's really just anomaly detection. And we've always had that, you know? Like this is like not a Transformers LLM use case. This is just regular anomaly detection.
It's more in terms of like it's not going to be an autonomous SRE for a while.
Yeah.
And so the question is how much can the latest sort of AI advancements increase the efficacy of bringing your MTTR down?
Yeah.
And
I see.
Even if it's 10% improvement on beforehand, that's still potentially a lot of revenue.
Okay.
Right. That's the way, at least, I think I would think about it now. And then, you know, a few years from now, if it's actually an autonomous SRE just replacing altogether, then that's a totally different thing.
Mm. Cool. I'll look out for it.
Yeah. You know, I guess switching back to overly broad questions, like, what do you feel like is the biggest unanswered question in AI today, you know, that has large implications for the ecosystem?
I've been banging the drum on RL, and I think it's clear that you can do RL successfully on verifiable domains.
Yes.
I would say whether or not we can figure out how to do that in non-verifiable ones. So law is a great example.
Totally.
Like, can you do RL on contracts and documents? Marketing, sales, going back to outbound sales, like, can you do RL to like simulate what an outbound and kind of like the conversation leads to? It's unclear. If not, then I think we'll be stuck with like, you're going to have agents in the more verifiable domains, and then you'll just kind of have co-pilots in the non-verifiable ones, because you'll still need a person to be the tastemaker.
So I had the exact same thing, and I feel like it's like the, I'm trying to think of the implications where if it doesn't work, like the world could be weird where like you have like fully autonomous AI coders and like, you know, no one does any software or math or even like, you know, some areas of science, but then like to write the most basic sales email is still like, it's always so hard to predict how the world, like that is such a weird, of all the sci-fi that was written, you know, 50 years ago, I don't think anybody foresaw that future. Like that is a really weird future.
I've called it industrialized autism.
Did either of you have a different one for that?
Biggest unanswered question. I guess, I don't know if this is a good answer, but, you know, Bob McGrew, we had on the podcast, and he was talking about, like, the rule of nines they have at OpenAI, where to go from 90% reliability to 99, it's an order of magnitude increase in compute, and then 99 to 99.9, order of magnitude increase, and that happens every 2 to 3 years. And so I think, how are we going to scale sort of accordingly? This sort of next part, I think there's a lot of unanswered questions just like from a hardware perspective. And then I think as part of that, from the availability perspective, like is NVIDIA just going to continue to be dominant? Like obviously AWS is going hard Trainium chips? I'm blanking on that. Thank you. And so I think like there's a big ecosystem around CUDA that's obviously allowed NVIDIA to remain dominant, but just what's going to happen and Is there anyone that's going to come sort of combat that to increase the availability of GPUs, or are we just going to be constrained going forward when we actually need way more compute going forward?
Yeah, my quick thoughts. I'm the only individual named as an investor in MedX, which is kind of like really funny because everyone else was funds and then it was just me. There's all these like NVIDIA startups, dedicated silicon startups that are coming up and trying to challenge that. And the simple answer is, like these GPUs are the most general things possible by design. That's why they do gaming and crypto and AI. And I think as long as the architecture seems stable, it seems like there's a case to be made for that. The only question is who will win that, and obviously there's a whole bunch of competitors, including I think AMD is trying to make a play for it. But so will AWS, and so will every other, like Microsoft has a chip, Facebook has a chip. So who knows who will win that? It's very interesting that like this seems to be such a valuable prize, like it's freaking NVIDIA that you're competing with, and no one has really made a real dent there yet. I kind of agree with you, but like I think that it's all about stability of workload, and as long as it's a bet on like the death of transformers basically, and if you're fine with that, like even and I think like the even a state space model people would agree that like it wouldn't really change that much, and probably I think the overall consensus is that you don't even use state space models individually. Like you would use them in a mixture with transformers anyway.
Yeah.
So then like, just go bet on transformers, bake it into the chip, and you will have way more, basically ASICs like for transformers, and that's fine. And so like prima facie, there should be a company that wins that. Yeah. I don't know who will win.
I wish we knew.
I think anyone, you have to start basically after 2019 or 2020, because anyone started before that will still be too general, Transformers hadn't won at the time. I have one more. I think that the most emergent one that came out of the New York conference that I did was agent authentication. Mm. I think literally the information just published, this is something that they're worried about, which is when operator or whoever accesses your website on behalf of you, how does it indicate that it's not you, but it's an agent of you? And I think like my general philosophy on agent experience or any of the sort of like reinvention of every part of the stack for agents is they're all not necessary except for this agent auth thing. Like we really need to be able to like new SSO effectively for agents.
Is it going
to
be crypto? But crypto people are really amped about the
It's really frustrating when Sam Altman is right, but like maybe you have to scan your eyeballs. Like maybe you just have to. Maybe he saw this like 5 years ago and he was like, you got to scan your eyeballs. And like the rest of us are just behind him as usual.
I love it. Well, okay, now I'll move to the quick fire round where we'll go around the horn and get quick takes on things. So the first is going to be dream podcast guest.
John Carmack.
Yeah. John is like six steps away from solving AGI apparently. So we just ask him how long, how far along he is. For us is Andre. For me is Andre. He's a listener and supporter of the pod. And like basically, when I launched the whole AI engineer push that we have, he was basically the first one to legitimize it. He was like, you know, there will be more AI engineers than ML engineers, and I think that made everyone else pay attention. So like, Latent Space only exists because you know he helps. He and other people help to promote it.
Yeah.
I also had Andre, so yeah, I guess we're thinking the same thing there.
Mine's a little bit cheating, but I think at some point they're writing a book about OpenAI now, and at some point, like somebody probably acquired will get to do the acquired OpenAI episode. But if unsupervised learning could, like, there's clearly just like so many amazing stories of like the last 5-6 years.
Do you know about Doomers? It's a play. I'm actually going to it this Saturday. Someone made a play about the board drama of last year.
Really?
Yeah, 2 years ago. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. Let us know how it is.
Yeah, let us know.
Maybe we should have the director
of that on the pod.
No, I think it's a lot of fan fiction, basically. But like, someone will write the accounts, and it will be interesting and fascinating. And a lot of it will be fake because it's a complex beast, right? You're just getting an oral history of what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, for the next one, I figured you could shout out either like a new source you use to stay up to date or a startup that you're not invested in that you're excited about.
Oh.
Or you can do it together.
My new source is Sean.
That's what I was going to say. I literally wrote Swix's Twitter. So
we have a Latent Space Discord. Any link that ever matters on the internet, Sean's going to post it in the Discord. So all I do, I open Discord. We have like, you know, 40-50 different channels.
Actually,
I open Discord and I'm like, okay, AI, then I go developer tools, then I go creator economy, then I go stock and macro, then I go, and they're all there. So thank you.
We actually met because of the Discord. It was like a COVID thing because everyone's at home and just started the Discord. And yeah, that was the origin of Latent Space, just chatting on the Discord.
It used to be called dev/invest.
Yeah.
So it was all about developer tools investing. And then we were at OpenAI in October of 2022. We're like, maybe we should do a podcast. And then OpenAI was the first guest.
I was not prepared about the news sources thing. I think maybe it's hard. It's really shitty to say, but like just in-person conversations.
Yeah.
I think the reason I have to be here in SF is because I make friends with people who know things and are smarter than me. And we go for chats, and they're nice enough to share some stuff. And so sometimes I worry that I am being used in order to put things out there that are maybe not true. But, you know, so I have to exercise my own judgment as to what
I think one of the cool things about the podcast in general is just like the opportunity to take these conversations that happen in like closed rooms and try and bring them on to the airwaves. I'm curious, like, how much do you feel like the private discourse is similar to the public discourse?
In many ways, it is surprisingly similar.
Yeah.
As in, people at OpenAI learn about things about OpenAI from us, which is interesting. And then there are some ways in which it is drastically not, drastically dissimilar, and those are the things I just cannot repeat until it's public.
This has been super fun. I feel it lived up to it. We were looking forward to this for a while. we want to make sure everyone around the horn gets an opportunity to plug whatever they want to plug. So we'll leave the last word to all of us, I guess. Where can folks go to learn more about Latent Space and all the exciting things you do? Want to make sure our listeners have a good sense of everything.
Yes. So we have a Substack. Latent.space is the website. And then please subscribe on YouTube. We're doing a lot of YouTube. We're trying to do better video and all of that.
He set our OKRs, and it's basically all YouTube.
Come watch us on YouTube. It's very important for me personally. So even if you don't care, just gotta hit
those OKRs.
Well, we have to increase our production value. Look at this.
I know. We only have 3 cameras. Yeah, and then Sean does a lot of the writing outside of the podcast on the newsletter. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like trying to be newsletter and community and podcast and whatever else that we do. So I guess for me, I guess there's Dayton Space, but then there's also the other big piece, which is the conference that I run. Yeah. And the idea is that I think sometimes you just get the good stuff from people if you just put them in front of a lot of people. And that's really like I'm mining people for content, and sometimes you put a mic in front of them and they yap for an hour. Other times you have to put them in front of like a prestigious conference and then they drop some alpha. And so the next one for us is going to be June. It's the AI Engineering World's Fair, and it should be the largest technical conference for AI.
And ours is simple. Just we just run a humble podcast. So subscribe to Unsupervised Learning on YouTube. Alessio Swix, thanks so much. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you guys. Thanks for coming on.